Practice makes perfect. Learn Minecraft.
Welcome to the Learn Minecraft podcast. This week, I'm joined by Lindsay from Wild Sea Calligraphy to talk all things modern calligraphy. You'll learn the basics every beginner should know about calligraphy, the tools that you need to get started, and how to avoid the most common mistakes. I came away feeling so inspired, and this actually might have to be my new hobby. So whether you've never tried calligraphy before, or you're trying to improve your lettering skills, Lindsay's practical tips and inspiring journey will have you reaching for your ink in no time. So let's begin. Hello and welcome to the Learn Minecraft podcast. I've been so excited to chat with you today. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Okay, so I'm Lindsay of Wild Sea Calligraphy. I am a calligrapher based in Plymouth, which is in the southwest of England, down in Devon, next to Cornwall, basically. And I've been teaching calligraphy since 2017.
Wonderful, fantastic. And how did you discover calligraphy?
So I initially discovered calligraphy when I was actually a web designer. And there was a blog at the time, so this is going back to 2009. There was a blog, an American blog called Design Sponge. And this is before weddings got really big in this country and like wedding blogging got really big. So there's a blog called Design Sponge, and they used to feature these beautiful weddings in America, and they used to have like gorgeous stationery. It was all handwritten and it was all letterpress. And, you know, going from being a web developer and web designer, which was at the time I was doing a lot of like masculine projects, and it got a bit tedious. And then just seeing all this work was just like a breath of fresh air. Completely fell in love with it, and then it kind of started from there, and then it's well, eventually snowballed, really.
That's wonderful. And how did what influence sort of shaped your style in calligraphy?
I think obviously at the time, again going back to the wedding stationery, it was all handwritten. Unbeknownst to me, it was modern calligraphy. I didn't know much about calligraphy at the time. So it was modern calligraphy. And I bought a book. The first book that I bought was a book by a lady called Eleanor Winters called Mastering Copperplate Calligraphy. I bought that book and I kind of wondered, how difficult could it be? Picked that up, had no, like, you know, no clue at all, how difficult it would be. I sort of, you know, there wasn't many people in this country that I knew of at the time that were teaching modern calligraphy. So there was a lady called Molly Jacks, who was teaching it online in America. Being from Devon in Plymouth, I couldn't find anyone local that were teaching the style of calligraphy that I wanted to learn, which was the modern style. So I learned a bit from her at the beginning. And then I think I joined a couple of Facebook groups. Again, they were all American because it was coming from America. For me, that was where the information was coming from and where the inspiration was coming from. So I was sort of joining Facebook groups in America and sort of learning from them. Instagram, really, that's... Yeah, at the time Instagram was getting really big and people were doing a lot of videos, so I was watching a lot of other calligraphers doing videos, trying to understand how they were creating what they were creating, because I couldn't find anyone to teach me properly what I wanted to know.
Right, okay.
Sorry, and I will go on a little bit.
No, that's good. I want to know everything.
Oh, okay, yeah, keep going.
Yeah, well, what, how many types of calligraphy are there, because I didn't know this either?
There are loads. There are more than there are. So I wanted to learn modern calligraphy because that was what was popular at the time, and that was what was really inspiring me. And sort of like that was like a magpie, like, for me to see that. I didn't want to learn, which was a big mistake, actually. I didn't want to learn the older scripts, the more formal scripts, because I was like, they're a bit too old-farty for me. And actually, I completely take that back now, because I love those scripts. They are the best scripts to learn. And I think for me, my calligraphy script is probably loosely based on copperplate calligraphy. So now that, you know, as my journey progressed and I started finding more people online to learn from, I went down, you know, the copperplate route, because you learn modern and actually you kind of learn that. And it's like an entrance art, really. You're doing that, it kind of brings you into it, and then all of a sudden this whole world has opened up to you because you're seeing this, and then you see what other things you can do. So I got my head around modern calligraphy. There were some answers that I couldn't sorry some questions that I couldn't find answers to, And then that led me down to copper plate calligraphy and learning that. And this is kind of towards the start of lockdown, I would say.
Okay.
And sort of meeting people online. So there's a group called the European Pointed Pen Collective. And they were kind of bringing a lot of people over. And then from that group, I learned, which is really frustrating, that there were local groups that are part of something called the Calligraphy and Lettering Art Society. And they have like little breakout groups all over. There's one in Plymouth, and there's one in Exeter. And the lady
found a local group then. Yay.
Yeah. this lady, Eleanor Winters, I didn't know, you know, that she was coming to Exeter to teach calligraphy. Like, I didn't know, have a clue about that. So I kind of went in that direction. You know, you start appreciating how difficult these scripts are and, you know, how technical they are. And then, you know, and once you sort of master them, you feel really proud. And then you start, you know, calligraphy is very much like when you're a creative person, you know, there's loads of calligraphy out there. You've got modern, you've got copper plate. And even under modern, you've got like bouncy modern, you've got fine art modern. You've got, you know, modern that is inspired by other scripts. You've got copper plate, you've got Spencerian, you've got American cursive, you've got French round hand, English round hand. You've got the foundational scripts, you've got Unshaw, Gothic scripts. That's just, you know, I'm not even, I would say, an expert. You know, there's people that they could reel off everything, Arabic calligraphy. And it wasn't until I was asked to write my book did I know that how little I knew about calligraphy, actually. Huh. It was quite embarrassing to teach it and not know as much as what I thought I did.
Oh, that's fantastic. Tell me more about your book.
So my book, I've got it here. It's called The Calligraphy Ideas Book. I was asked to write this in early 2019. So I think I was asked to write it Easter 2019. And basically it's a great little sort of book you can put in your bag. It's fantastic for inspiration. I kind of wish, I know that I'm tooting my own horn here, I wish it was around when I was learning calligraphy, because I didn't know the difference between certain scripts. I didn't know copper plate was copper plate and Spencerian was Spencerian. And there was also a script called engrosser script. You know, that would have stopped me from spending a lot of money on workshops that I didn't or wasn't ready to do at the time. So this book, basically, it's interviewing lots of different calligraphers from around the world, men and women from different parts of the world, and sort of talking about their style of calligraphy, you know, what influenced them. And also not only that, it gives you information about that calligrapher, their website, who they've learned from. A lot of these calligraphers in this book teach online as well, so you can actually go and learn from them. But yeah, it wasn't until I wrote this book I realised, you know, how little I knew about all the different types of calligraphy that are out there. So you have lovely ornamental calligraphy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is, you know, phenomenal. You have Japanese calligraphy. Yeah, you've got lots and lots of things going out there. A little bit of Unshaw.
Gosh, that's so exciting. I had no idea, I guess, how deep the world of calligraphy was.
It's such a big world. It's quite frustrating because it's a big world. It doesn't feel like it's where we are. Like, it's, you've got colleges up in London and you know, that teach it, properly teach it. I would love to go somewhere like that.
So as a beginner then, because I am very much a beginner, what equipment do you suggest?
You don't need to think what you think you do, and it doesn't need to be as expensive as you think it needs to be. You basically need a good nib. Mm-hmm. So I use a Nikko G nib, which you'll have in your kit. So ideally a straight pen holder. So this is a straight pen holder. Mm-hmm. You can also have an oblique pen holder. So this is the one that I use quite a lot. I think as I was a beginner, it depends on how you feel and what you feel more comfortable with. Sometimes, you know, you'll get on with one pen holder more than others. There are lots of different types of pen holders out there. There are ones that are slightly ergonomic. There are ones with big cork parts at the end that I found quite helpful because I was very heavy-handed and my hand would always fall off the pen. I'd say a straight pen holder to begin with. A good calligraphy ink. The biggest mistake I made as I was learning, I was using something called a Higgins Eternal ink. And I was trying to use that ink with the bog standard copy paper, and the ink to feather out or bleed out on the paper.
Okay.
And I completely thought it was me and my fault, but some inks don't work with certain papers. That's all that is. So I tried to use like either a good Indian ink or a Sumi ink. You know, you can get anywhere. You can make your own inks of gouache, water, and a bit of gum arabic. So it's completely up to you again. And then as long as you understand that, you can adapt the equipment to suit you as the individual. So sometimes you'll get ink that is too thick, And sometimes you'll get ink that's too thin. You can add a bit of water, or you could let it evaporate. So there's a lot of little things there that, you know.
Oh, I didn't realize you could add water to it and thin it
Yeah,
anymore.
I know.
That's
You
really
don't
interesting.
care
Yeah.
about it. So, yeah. So use a little pipette and just drops of water in. You know, you get these big bottles of it from like a Sumi ink, and I just decant it into little ointment pots, which work really well.
Right, okay.
Paper wise, I would say this paper is probably the best as a beginner to begin with. It's either called Rhodia or Rhodia. I can't pronounce it because I'm very Plymouthian.
Rhodia.
I'm Rhodia.
I
So
don't
I
know.
love this paper. It's like, it's a vellum based paper and it's really smooth. So the smoother the paper, the easier it's going to be to write, because your nib won't catch on any of the fibers.
Right,
so
okay.
if you're trying to write on handmade paper straight away as a beginner, you're figuring you can't understand why it's not working, it's because, you know, it's handmade and the fibers are going to get caught in a really pointy nib.
Right.
Other papers you'll have in your kit, you'll have the Frisk layout paper. So,
right.
You know, layout paper is great because it handles the ink really well, and you can use it almost like Photoshop layers, so you can layer it up to create compositions. So this is a really good one, Frisk layout. You see it's quite a small weight. I also quite like this. I use this one in my workshops when I'm teaching. So
okay.
Yeah, so De La Rowney or Frisk, basically.
Yes, they're a good brand.
Yeah, really good brand. They just, as long as they handle the ink really well. And I also use Silvine tracing paper.
Okay.
So it's quite
tracing
good.
Paper, writing on
so
tracing paper. That's so
it doesn't bubble too much, but you know, sometimes you trace, sometimes, you know, you want to find things that aren't going to be battling against you. So I would say the Rhodia and the layout paper absolutely are a must. HB pencil or mechanical pencil, and that's it really. Like, you know, you just need paper, a good paper, nib, ink, pen holder. Don't need anything else. You don't even need nib and ink if you don't want to. You can just try it with a pencil or a Crayola pen, you know.
Right, okay.
Because what you're learning is two different things. You're learning pen control, so how to hold the pen, to use the pen. That goes comes with practice. And you're also learning the style of lettering.
Right.
So two different things.
Yes, the style of lettering is just, I feel like, would be the hardest part, because there's so many like different intricate things. I guess it obviously depends on what style as well.
And some styles are easier than others. I probably make my modern a bit too complicated, because my modern calligraphy has a background in copperplate. So where I've learned copperplate, I bring it into my modern calligraphy, and then whoever's been learning a workshop with me can then go off and, you know, learn any kind of workshop, and it'll be the same kind of format. I do
make
my modern slightly more difficult because I want to prepare people to be able to move on, not just sit there being stuck.
Right, okay, that makes sense. So you sent me the starter kit for calligraphy starters. So should we go through what's in the kit then?
Okay,
so I've got, this is the
straight pen holder.
Straight pen holder, right?
That's from,
and in here.
That is your nib. So the straight pen holders I use are from a company called Manuscript Pens. They've been going since 1856, I believe. And they coined the term World Calligraphy Day.
Oh, wow.
You can
get
a lot of calligraphy supplies from them too. Not that I'm going to get paid to say that. Yeah, you'll have a silver nib. Okay. So you have a nib there.
And that, how do you put it in?
So, just going to show you my screen, because it makes life a lot easier if I do this. My camera's a bit fussy.
That's all right.
You see, you've got like a little edge here. Let me just.
Yes.
There you go. So, you've got a little metal ring. It is complicated on this one. What you do is get your end of your nib, and you put it not bang in the middle, so you don't put it like that. So, it's a gap between each one like this, okay? So, can you see that?
A gap between.
There's a little gap between these little teeth,
yes,
and the edge of this metal rim here. You can push it all the way.
Oh,
so
okay.
So it doesn't want to be out like this far. So you don't want to have that far where it's wobbly.
Right.
So push it
right.
in, not too far, because you don't want to snap the pen holder, but enough to the point where it's not wobbly.
Okay, so something like that. Can you see?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, yeah. If you can see. Okay, fantastic.
Okay, and then you hold your pen.
Mm-hmm.
When I write, I, you know, I obviously was daydreaming, so I never learned to write correctly. So I have a pen on my fourth finger like that. Okay.
Right.
So
okay.
Right. I end up writing quite upright, which will catch the paper and flip ink everywhere. Kind of.
I see. Okay.
So what you want to do is for this calligraphy. So the nib is pointed. Okay. So it's called pointed pen calligraphy. So style of pointed pen calligraphy, ideally, you want your nib, your pen to be at a 45 degree angle like this. To get that, you put middle finger like this, okay? Can you see that? So I'm balanced on my middle finger, a centimetre away from the pen edge. So you're not down here, you're not all here, a centimeter away.
Right.
This, okay?
Okay.
Middle finger balanced like this. This part of your hand is on the paper. And then when you're writing, you go up and down. So you don't have any push fingers. This one gets stuck under as well. Up and down. So it's called sliding up and down the page. Up, down. Okay. It's not a lot of finger movement. When you're writing calligraphy, it's not all this. It's up, down. And then as you're coming down, you apply the pressure. So up, down. And as you push down, see the two points?
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're meant to push quite hard then, are you?
Not too hard. So you want it kind of like a millimetre and a half kind of shaded stroke as you're pushing down the thick line. So thick line is always down and thin line is up. And you're moving hand up and down the page.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Right. So in this kit, we've got paper as well, don't we? Yeah. The little frisk pad you were talking about.
Yep.
And some ink and a little beautiful little greetings card, I guess, that you can write to somebody. Practice your writing.
Press everything in the studio as well.
Yeah. And some ink. And then this workbook.
Yes.
Which is incredibly extensive. I'm very excited to go through it. This is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life now. My new hobby. Okay, so in here it talks all about how to hold it as well, which is incredibly useful.
Yeah. So I try to make it, you know, it's hard when you're not there to show someone what to do.
Right.
And that's why I'd always recommend, on top of this, to go and get an in-person workshop and get shown, because it's hard to show you how you're supposed to sit and sort of move around. There are a couple of videos online. So I believe that there's a chap called Paul Antonio who is, you know, phenomenal. He's got some great free resources on his YouTube channel, and he'll talk to you very in depth about how to sit, how to hold your pen.
Right.
They're worth having a look at that. But definitely get, you know, as soon as you can, get an in-person workshop.
Yes. Okay. Fantastic. So would you like to talk us through this workbook then, and how it sort of works for a beginner?
Okay. So I'm going to change back to here again. Move the camera a little bit. So this workbook, it has many iterations. I pretty much change every year. So there's information here about how to hold your pen, okay, and how to twist your paper around correctly. So the big myth about pointed pen calligraphy is you sit and you write with your paper directly in front of you. Okay. But if you look at pointed pen calligraphy, use Eleanor's book as an example, it all slants to the right. Okay.
Oh, roughly
a 55 degree angle. Now, if I have my paper directly in front of me, and have to twist my arm around, that's not very comfortable.
Yeah, okay.
So what you tend to do is you take your paper from that angle and you twist it around to here. Okay. And then I'm going to hold this like this. Quite difficult to show you. And then you are basically pointing your pen in that direction, okay, to the top right corner. So your paper is twisted around.
Yes, okay.
And you point this way, up, down.
So your body can stay straight. And it's not, I guess, twisting your arm too much. Yeah.
No. If you're, are you right-handed or left-handed?
I'm right.
Right. So if you are right-handed, you have your left foot forward and right foot back as well. So you never cross your legs. Sit up straight. Really good posture.
Oh, okay. Don't cross your legs.
No. And don't forget to breathe. So this is basically, this tells you here how to hold your pen correctly. I'm just going to stay zoomed in. It's a little bit of a monkey, this one. And this is trying to tell you how to move your paper around. There's also a video link here as well. So that's my Patreon, sorry. There's a video here that I recorded pre-COVID. So it is, you know, about 10 workbooks back, but you kind of get the general gist of what I'm talking about, and it will get updated.
Right.
So give you a bit of a help there. Information about setting up your pen, posture and grip, really important, because if you write for 50 years with bad posture, you're going to have issues. Common problems about the nib catching on the paper. A lot of the time is the paper, you know, the nib is held too high. And the other way is people are pointing the pen in the wrong direction, which I can show you as well. Useful resources, I've listed everything there that I would use. So every type of nib that's worth buying, I've listed there. All the different ink, different types of paper, different types of books, and podcasts. And I believe here I've actually written, you know, the great supplies. So Scribblers in this country is brilliant for these supplies. I can get them. And Colt's pens are also really good for, like, you can use fountain pen inks with your calligraphy too.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I try to make it as helpful as possible. And then after here, you've got some information about how to use your guidelines, how to use ratios. So this is, you know, sort of if you wanted slightly more formal calligraphy and you wanted everything to look really exact. And I actually, during my workshop, I teach this towards the end of the workshop where everyone's warmed up, because if I was going to try to teach this at the beginning, I think a lot of people would, you know, freak out a little bit.
Right, okay.
After that, we've got information about warming up. So before you start any project, it's really important to warm up your wrist, and get in the right mindset. So if I sat down straight away and start writing wedding envelopes without warming up, I'd probably ruin the first 10.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they wouldn't look great. So these are great things to warm up. Again, these don't have to be perfect when you're starting them, especially as a beginner, because all you're trying to do is make sure you can get, you know, the thick strokes, the hairlines. And for this, as a beginner and during my workshop, what I would ask you to do is get one sheet of your layout paper and you would trace it. So you
okay.
You know, this going up, around, so you get the idea of how it's got to be. It doesn't matter how you do it, but it allows me to see how you hold your pen and to make any adjustments that, you know, you need to make to help you along your way.
Right, okay. Interesting.
So you would warm up on here. Trace them all. There is a reason why there are only so many of each one, because you can just move on. Otherwise, it's quite easy to spend all of your time trying to perfect a downstroke, and you can spend an hour doing that, and before you know it, you've not really progressed any further. So you've got I've got a grayed out version, so you can go over with your own nib and ink as well if you didn't want to trace, if that's easier on your eyes. And then, you know, try doing it yourself. Like, take the stabilizers off and have a go here.
Yeah.
And then you've got your lowercase alphabet. So sometimes people will teach a workshop and they'll do it in groups. So anything that's sort of oval shaped, they'll group that together, descenders and ascenders. But here, again, what I'd want you to be doing is tracing these.
Okay.
And I'd be showing you how you would be doing, you know, an A, for an example, would be your oval shape first.
The paper you include is really good. I can see perfectly through it.
Yeah, it handles the ink, so it doesn't feather out. You know, you can use a lot of Indian inks because sometimes they can be quite thin. But yes, you know, a layout paper is really good. Layout paper is really good because if, for example, I was trying to do a bit of flourishing, I could do, you know, and I'll do a bit darker. Do a G.
Right.
Okay, I want to flourish that, but I don't want to ruin that G because I've got the G looking really good at the moment. Yeah, how would I flourish that? I'd get my layout paper so that you can see that very well. But you could do that, and then you get another layout paper, and then you trace over it. So fantastic for composition work. And that's how I teach a lot of my students that.
Oh, okay. So flourishing is like adding, I guess, decoration.
Yeah, the edges, which is the next step. Don't worry, as a beginner, I wouldn't worry about flourishing. Just get the technique.
It looks very exciting, though.
I mean, so that's why I say it's just, once you start with this, opens up a massive, like a whole world of calligraphy. So here again, you know, I'm teaching you how to put your letters together. At this point during my workshop, I would stop and go through individually and show you how to put every letter together, because it's not how you would do your normal writing.
Right.
So for an example, if you were going to do an H, normally you'd probably do something like this. Yeah, so you go up, sort of down and back up. But in this calligraphy, even if I was doing this, you wouldn't do that. You would go down, pen off the paper, and you would add a separate stroke, which is called the compound curve.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, so it's little things like that, that it's hard if you're trying to figure it out yourself, that, you know, actually if someone shows you that, it makes absolute sense.
I see. Okay. So what's the purpose of that? Is that to stop your nib catching? And
I think it's just to give, you know, basically everything in modern calligraphy or pointer pen calligraphy is based around the oval shape.
Right.
So, you know, you've got your H would be there, and then your compound curve would be like that. And it's to let the forms breathe. It's a good question though, actually. I need to look into a bit more about why it has to be like that, but it just works really well. Probably something to do with, you know, with when you've got something like copper plate calligraphy, which is one of the older scripts. It's a 16th century script. Someone would write this, and another person would engrave it into copper plates and use it for printing. And maybe it's got something to do with the engraving. Maybe it makes the engraving worse by doing that. But that's a good question. I'll go and find out.
I'm very excited and I'm nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. So you've got, you know, tracing lots of that. Then you'll see you've got the capitals, which aren't so complicated. You can, you know, do what you want with them. And then actually you can see here, bit further along, you can see how I've broken down the strokes into.
Okay.
And you can kind of see here how everything is based around that oval.
Yes.
It's almost like an oval force field around your lettering. It's no sir.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So you'd work through that. You can trace and go over it as many times as you want and then freehand it. And keep going along. And then you've got numbers at the back, which are always fun. And then we've got, you know, how to connect your letters, because sometimes it's great if you can write the alphabet. It's quite depressing if that's all you can do at the end of a workshop. So you know how to connect your letters together. Just some very easy flourishes. Things like extending your connection stroke to make different, you know, things look different.
Yeah, that looks so cool.
More things to trace. And basically the best of the book is just things for you to play around with. The reason why it's grayed out is because I really recommend tracing. I use it quite a lot. You know, if you're mocking up a composition piece, a big piece, a calligrapher would mock it up in a pencil to begin with and then trace over it. You know, it's never directly, you know, written directly with nib and ink, but if you're learning these kind of things, it's just so you can understand how strokes are formed. You know, you trace over it with your pen.
Right, okay.
You know, tracing is good for muscle memory, understanding how things are formed.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end of the book, we've just got some examples of how you would use guidelines, other spare guidelines that you can put under your paper for a bit more formal calligraphy as well. And I believe that is it. Lots of guidelines.
Well, it's a pretty extensive book then. It's incredible.
Yeah, it takes you a little bit beyond beginner into slightly intermediate. So then hopefully that, even if you don't understand some of those things, they're swimming around in your brain. So when you go to look at our next workshop or next level or next steps, you don't feel as terrified.
Right, yeah. Oh, can we do some calligraphy now?
Yeah, okay.
Right, let's start from very basics in terms of dipping the nib in the ink. How do you not get it everywhere? And what's the best technique for doing that?
Structure of your nib. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
So, make sure that's zoomed in nicely. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your tines, which are these two pointy bits here. Okay.
Right.
You've got your shoulders here, and you've got something called the vent hole here. The name of the nib will always be here. The name of the manufacturer name will always be here. So you can go into an art shop and look at some nibs, and it'll always tell you what the name of the nib is there. Mm-hmm. When you dip your nib into your ink pot, you want the ink to go past the vent hole at this point here. So it looks like this. So here's, I'm using some gouache. This is some ink I made up for some wedding invites last week.
Mm-hmm.
So you would dip it in.
Past the vent hole.
Past the vent hole. And actually, I must tell you, when nibs come direct from the shop, they're coated in oil to stop them from going rusty. So you might find at the beginning that your nib won't be able to handle the ink. The ink will slide off your nib. So sometimes you just have to, some people give it a lick. Although I tend to rub sort of the nib there and underneath and get the oil off it. You could put it under the tap with some soap or some toothbrush. Some people put a little light flame underneath it as well. So just give it a rub as well without stabbing yourself because they're quite sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so try again. I've got a magnet in mine at the moment. Okay, so you can kind of see that bumping up every now and again.
Oh, okay.
My ink. Okay, so you want to go all the way in. So it's kind of, you can see it there underneath in the reservoir.
Right.
And then we hold our pen. So we want this part of our pen slot here.
We'll hold
that angle. Paper is twisted all the way around.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm
that's how I normally write anyway. So that's very useful.
So this is the top of my paper here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is it directly in front of me. And this is how I'm going to write at this angle, pointing in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The pen needs to be parallel to the paper.
Right.
So when I push down, when I push down, the two tines, two pointy bits open and they pull down like that. Can you see that? Now, if I'm at this angle, from this way and slightly overhand, they won't open properly and they catch. So if you're an underhand writer, so I'm an underhand writer, so I push along the page, okay? And so it means that the nib opens properly. If I'm overhand and I'm pointing the nib in the complete opposite direction, you can see how it's, you know, I'm trying to open the nib up here and it's not doing it because the pen is the wrong way around.
I see. Okay.
So if you're getting a lot of resistance, have a look down and see where your pen is pointed because you want it to be pointing to the top right corner.
How often do you have to keep dipping your ink?
So generally every 3 to 4 strokes. It depends how much pressure you're putting down. So if I'm pushing down and doing this and a big blob of ink is coming out, you can see that that's too much. Okay, I'm pushing.
Yeah, that's what I did the first time.
Yeah, so you can see the difference between that's the ideal stroke, okay, and this is a little bit too much. You see how wet it is there and how thick it is.
Right, yes.
So a little bit less pressure. Oops.
And then when it looks like two lines again, need more ink.
Yeah, so one, two, three, four, five, you know, six times. And you'll get used to it because you'll start seeing it getting more transparent as you go.
How's that?
It happens to the best of us. Yep, lovely. You can kind of see the last two thick strokes.
Yeah.
And the hairline's great. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to get a shaded stroke. So the thick line is called a shaded stroke. Shade.
Right. The shade.
And thin line is called a hairline.
Okay.
There's a thick stroke and a thin stroke. If your thin stroke is wobbly, don't worry, because that's you not used to using, and doing that stroke. That goes with practice. Sometimes you apply less pressure and go up a little bit quicker. It makes it easier.
Okay. You're
pushing it up and you're creating resistance, you'll, probably have more of a wobble.
Right, I see. Okay.
And another trick I do is when you do this, and you get your ink on your nib and you do that, if you push down straight away, you're going to have a big blob of ink, okay? And if you're heavy hand, that's really frustrating. Mm-hmm. So what I tend to do is I'll push down a couple of times, okay, and get rid of the first blobs. That means there's less ink on my nib, but it's easier for me to control.
Okay. So always have like a spare piece of paper next to you to get the excess off.
I always fold it up and then I always have a scrap piece of paper like this.
Yeah.
I'll put it underneath my ink pot and I'll just be doing this in the corner.
Right, okay.
Expect to get very inky. I'm inky already.
Right. Who doesn't love a messy craft?
Yeah. I'm always amazed that calligraphers don't get completely messy. And then you would trace, as you go along. So you would trace all of these, okay?
Gosh, that's so fantastic. It's very satisfying.
Yep. So you should sit up straight, sort of, good posture. Left hand is at the top of the paper. So your left hand is kind of holding your paper like this. And at the top, so you're not getting your fingers in it. Trace as you go along. Don't forget to breathe.
Right. Yeah. I did actually forget. I was holding my breath.
Yeah.
That's funny. Oh, well, that's fantastic. What are the common mistakes that people tend to make when they're starting out?
The main one is holding a pen incorrectly.
Yeah.
So this is, from this angle, this is how I ideally hold my pen. Going this way, so it means I can do things like this, I can create my strokes. I can do this and this because my pen is pointing this way and pulling down that way. The biggest mistake is people holding the pen this way and trying to pick it up. And I can't open the tines up and nothing's happening. I'm not getting anything, okay?
Right, so you can't do the shade part.
Because some people write like this normally.
Right.
So they are pulling and some people write like this normally and they are pushing. So you can see how pushy people, underhand writers, will easily get that. But you have to completely adjust. You can even see how I'm holding my pen differently. So overhand writers would hold like that. And they'd be slightly more over as they're writing, and underhand, you're more like this. So it's sitting here, and this part of my hand is on the paper, and I'm sliding up and down. And also, I think rushing, from my own experience, rushing, going too fast, and thinking, this is how I've got to do it. When actually it's because for the scripts like Complete and Spencerian, take your time. And it is that slow.
It's very elegant, isn't it?
It is. And I think being hard on yourself as well. We're already bad at it. But I think I've only taught one person who's been, complete genius straight away. We've all got to try hard. And it's, perseverance and practice makes progress, really.
Yes, definitely.
I don't find it easy. I have never found it easy. I've just been really, really determined.
So what challenges have you faced and how did you overcome them with calligraphy?
Do you know what? The main one is determination. That's the main challenge.
Right.
There was, when I was trying to learn it, like I said earlier on, I couldn't find anyone to teach calligraphy for me I wanted to learn. So it's finding the right calligraphy, learning from my mistakes. My biggest challenge is practice. I don't practice enough or as much as what I would like to, and that's down to me and Netflix and my relationship with Netflix. at the moment my challenge is practice. I need to practice more. That, you know, there's been a period of illness that really affected me, but you know, that's over now. I think also learning the traditional styles, like I said earlier, I didn't want to learn them, but actually I love them. You know, they are, a lot of people don't, you know, will bypass them for the prettier scripts or the scripts that they can monetize quicker, but actually you shouldn't discard those. They might, you know, they're slightly more difficult, but you know, it's worth learning if you're actually interested in acquiring a good skill. And for me, it's distance. So, you know, there are some crafts and some forms of calligraphy I'd like to learn, but you know, I'm in Devon. Some of the places are in Norfolk, and I can't learn. You know, I can't physically get there to learn. You know, to learn from them, people that I would like to learn from.
Oh, I see. So, how big is the calligraphy community then? Like, have you found more of your local ones, or is there more of an online community?
Well, both actually. So there's obviously the European Pointer Pen Collective. There's Calligraphy and Lettering Art Society Class, CLAS. They're British. There is the Society of Scribes and Illuminators, which, you know, that's for, you know, heraldry and things like that, which is phenomenal. And I would love to get into that, but I just don't know where to learn. You know, that's in this country. You've got, everyone's got sort of the individual sort of umbrella groups, which are lovely. So I'm going to go and teach there on Saturday, actually. So we've got Plymouth calligraphers. A lot of them are shutting down. So we had Exeter letterers who folded, I think, last year, which is a real shame. Because a lot of the people, you know, have got skills that are worth learning. In America, you've got something called IAMPEF, which is the International Association of Master Penmen, Engrossers and Teachers of Handwriting. They have a big conference once a year where everyone flies in from around the world to go.
Wow.
Love to go there, but again, this time I can't go. Yeah, it's big. Calligraphy world is big, and the more you dip into it, the bigger it gets. And then you get overwhelmed because there's so many different types of calligraphy. There's so many different types of calligraphers, and you just want to learn from them. And you know, during COVID, calligraphy became really accessible. So rather than me having to travel somewhere to learn, you know, having to pay for travel, having to pay them to teach me, having to pay for accommodation, I could learn online for, you know, a fraction of the price from, you know, absolute masters, which was phenomenal. So I was quite lucky that I'd already kind of picked up some things in person, and then when online here, I could understand what they were teaching. But yeah, I would say for me, I always say distance is my biggest problem, and practice.
Yes.
But it's different for everybody, really.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what advice do you wish that you had when you first started calligraphy then?
Stick to one script.
Right, okay.
Get really good at one script, okay? Mm-hmm. Don't try to bounce around, okay, and get completely distracted by all the pretty things. Learn one script, learn it well, move on to the next one, learn that, move on to the next one, learn that. And I'm the right person because it's so many years down the line, and you know, I've got lots of, you end up buying loads of workshops that you want to learn from and not doing them, and they've sat there for 3 years. So that's the biggest bit of advice. You know, practice, don't copy. That's really frustrating. And just talk to people, because I think the calligraphy community is actually a lot friendlier than what you think it is, because you think you're gonna get judged as a beginner. And it really shocked me actually how lovely everybody was, and really supportive and really kind and absolutely non-judgmental. Learn some proper scripts as well, so learn the traditional scripts too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay, not just modern or something.
Learn modern to begin with, if you find that easier. But
yeah,
you know, there are, and also, you know, there'll be some scripts that you find easy and some scripts that you find really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally find like some of the like Gothic scripts a lot easier with the broad edge nib than I do the pointed pen scripts. So
right.
I'd love to have a conversation with someone at the beginning, and someone's, you know, be able to bounce some ideas, and someone to suggest maybe try to go in that direction instead of spending so many years on this.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So the script is quite dependable on how the people write as well then.
Yeah, like you have your favourite script. Everyone has their favourite script.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Is yours still modern after all
yeah,
this time?
Yeah, it is. I love
Yep.
modern. I love
Yeah.
modern. I love how it feels when you get it right. I love
Okay.
it nourishing. I love the fact that there's no rules to it. So copper plate is very rules-based. There's no rules to modern, really. You can do what you
Right.
want. It's very unique to whoever's wielding the pen holder. It's
Mm-hmm.
very freeing. You can have loads of fun with it. You know, it's a nice script. It's a fun script to teach. Yeah, it's quite the possibilities is quite endless with modern, I think.
Right. Oh, and can you tell me a few ways we have to take care of the equipment as well?
So there are some probably better ways. The suggested way would probably be at the end of your session to take your nib out and give your nib and pen holder a really good clean and keep it separate and let it dry out. Or if you like me, just put it under a tap. I tend to have like a, you know, one of these blue cloths close by that dry out that you can reuse. I'll get it a little bit damp and I will clean the nib and bottom as well. Sometimes clean the pen holder. I've got jars and jars and jars of pen holders, depending on what my mood is, depending.
Right.
So this pen holder, I love doing modern calligraphy, this pen holder. I've got a specific pen holder that I use for Argate calligraphy, and yeah, it depends. I've got oblique pen holders I prefer to use for certain scripts as well.
Right,
Put them
okay.
somewhere. Don't put them near a window or somewhere you're going to stab yourself, or if you've got children, keep it away. Inks, just probably the best thing to do is always wipe the edge of your ink pot. Okay,
Right.
otherwise it will first of all dry and it'll be impossible to open. So you'd have to run it under a warm tap. But also sometimes the ink will crystallize and you'll get it in your nib, and after you know, as you do a nice bit of work, you'll get a big blob that comes out, which is really frustrating.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was going to ask something else about the pen. Oh, yes, that open nib. That one, yeah. Can you show us how you use that? Because that looks crazy.
So it's just an oblique pen holder. Just change my camera whilst what I'm doing. There we go. Excuse me 1 minute.
That's all right.
Okay. So this one is slightly heavy. This is called the flange. You have to make sure you can get plastic ones, but ideally you want a sort of metallic one here, and you can adjust it a little bit. When you get one of these pen holders, you need to make sure that the pointed part here lines up with the middle here. So it's not too far that way or too far that way. So it kind of lines up.
Okay.
So that's something that Paul Antonio taught me a couple of years ago. So this one, I believe, is an American invention and created during the golden age of calligraphy in America. So traditional calligraphy would be done with a straight pen holder, and this would be done sort of a Spencerian script. So if I show you an example, copper plate, straight pen holder, Spencerian, which is I'm just going to show you a beautiful example of Spencerian by a lady called Barbara Calzolari. So this is Spencerian here.
Oh, wow.
A,
Okay.
an oblique pen holder. Okay, I'll show
Right.
you a little bit more. So this is a lady called Barbara Calzolari, who created this for a workshop that we had just before COVID. So she comes over here and teaches this beautiful script now and again. So yeah, definitely worth checking her out. So sorry, I digress.
It's like a
That's
beautiful
calligraphy.
painting.
Yeah. Oh, she did it all up by hand. She is a master penman. There's only a number in the world. And she is absolutely phenomenal. She's very generous with her teaching. And you can learn from her online as well. So held it the same way. You kind of see how it's already pointing you in the direction you need to write from. You know,
Right.
I like an ergonomic pen holder preferably, so I can see where I hold my pen. And you would write. Same way.
Gosh, that's beautiful.
I've got a little bit of this camera getting in the way, so I made it slightly difficult. But yeah, it's no different. This is slightly heavier. It's quite weighted, but it's very, very nice.
Do you have to have your paper the same angle and all that kind of
Yeah,
stuff as
I
well?
always hold it the same way. And also, I think the biggest myth with calligraphy, and this is something that I actually teach my students, is what I said earlier on, is you mock it up with pencil first. And you can figure out the spacing. I'm terrible for spelling mistakes all the time,
Okay.
or missing a letter. So it allows me to, you know, make sure I don't make any spelling mistakes. If you write in an envelope, it saves time, you know, going over it. This happens quite a lot, by the way, fingers and your, and you can trace it.
So does this help with the overall look of it because you can flow a lot
Yeah.
better?
Yeah, I think sometimes for me, I find it quite limiting, especially when you're doing modern, because, you know, it's slightly freer. But as a beginner, you want to be doing this so you can stop any mistakes. And then you would rub that out when it's dry. So I usually leave it, you know, overnight to dry and rub it out. So do that every time. But, you know, you mock everything up with a pencil, even if you're doing sort of flourishes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you can see the spacing, you know, if I want to put some flowers in, I'll, you know, mock it where I want the flowers to go. I want to do a bit of
You
flourishing.
actually give quite a lot of space then, don't you?
Yeah, a lot more. I mean, my modern is very big. Like, I used to be a lot, you know, a lot smaller. I think, you know, I have very, my style of modern calligraphy is bounce calligraphy because the lettering is very, you know, bouncy, as you can see.
Right, yes, okay.
But, you know, you could make it very petite as well.
Right. Oh,
So
it's just so lovely.
depends what project you're working on as well. You know, you wouldn't be writing an envelope with that. Mr. and Mrs. has already filled up the whole page. There we go. I'll come back to you now.
How long does the ink take to dry?
It depends. So this is a gouache ink, so it won't take very long, like an hour, a couple of hours. But for me, to be on the safe side, I always leave it overnight to dry,
Okay.
because it might always be a little bit that's a little bit thicker, and you don't want to create something beautiful, especially if you're working for a client and they've given you X number of envelopes or pieces to write on, and you're going to ruin a bit by being too hasty. I use a Sumi ink that I think takes a lot longer to dry. Indian ink dries quite quickly for me. Walnut, you know, you can use walnut ink, and iron gall, and those two dry quite quickly as well. So it just depends on what you're working on. But don't make too many mistakes and let things not dry to now have to
Oh,
wait.
yes, okay. No, that's something that I would be hard to, it's hard to wait and just, yeah, I've already smudged some of mine already and got all my
Yeah,
fingers.
get covered in it.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, what you need to do is clean your nib as you go. So rather than
Right.
putting it in some water and then writing, because you end up with watery ink, is you would get your, you know, piece of wipe it down and then keep going, because as the ink dries on the nib, it affects the ink flow. So not so much with your ink that you've got, but when I'm using like a gouache, which does dry to, you know, quite quickly, it will then affect
Right.
things like your hairlines. I just keep, you know, minding to do that. That's good habits to get into.
Yes, okay. Oh, that's wonderful. So what are some beginner friendly projects and styles that you suggest trying first?
I always say, if I've got a student who's doing weddings, I'm like, brilliant. Weddings are great because you've written everyone's name settings, and by the end of that, you're going to be pretty proficient. Christmas is always great. So look at what's coming up. You know, if
Okay.
you've got autumn, Christmas is great for doing gift tags. So gift tags are really good. What I found as a beginner that I love doing, because I had young children as I was learning, and you go to a hell of a lot of kids' parties, is I would get, like, I would wrap the present and then I wouldn't put pressure on myself. So don't put pressure on yourself to write a beautiful message. So I do the card,
Okay.
write it normally. I'd get the envelope and I'd do the envelope in calligraphy. Either in,
Okay.
I'd do it with a Crayola pen. A bit of brush lettering with a Crayola pen or with a nib and ink, and that always looks really nice. And everyone always on that. And then as you get braver, so that's really good practice. So look at what you can do every day. So shopping list doesn't have to be of nib and ink. You've just seen me do my calligraphy with a pencil.
Yes.
You're practicing with a pencil with a biro, on a beach. So if you're on a beach, mess around on the beach. Yeah, cards are always good. Thank you cards, recipes, you know, gifts, anything like that. You can get chalk pens and get a bit of driftwood and write on that. Or, you know, one thing I used to teach as well, you can get like porcelain pens, can't you? So
Oh,
you get
yeah.
a mug or a plate and you'd write on the mug in your porcelain pen and then put that in the oven and then you can give that as a gift. So
Oh,
gifting's
wow.
always really good for a calligraphy project. There's loads out there. Pinterest are probably really good for inspiration, but not to steal. Absolutely don't pinch any ideas because someone's thought of that. Gifting. There's a lady called Lindsay Bugby who does the Postman's Knock. She does a regular newsletter that's really good for inspiration. Yeah, anything like that. There's so much out there. The big thing is don't get overwhelmed. Don't like be a magpie and get loads of things and don't know where to start. Just pick one thing, do that well, then move on.
Right, yeah, like maybe choosing one
maybe
style.
yeah. Look at all your birthdays for the year, go and buy some cards and just get them all written out for the year. Then you
No, that would be quite fun because I guess it's more about building that muscle memory then than actually using the specific pen.
yeah.
Right.
And sometimes it's like, well, I don't know what to do. Well, give yourself, look at the projects you can do. There's loads out there. Practice, not you don't have to practice every day because we're busy. Maybe like 15 minutes, half an hour every other day, if that. But yeah, the practice and thinking about it and like, reading it. If you buy a calligraphy book, make sure you read the book. Don't just look at the pictures because every calligraphy author and instructor has got a little bit of knowledge or tidbit, and you think, oh, that makes sense. Completely everything slides into place now. So always read the book.
Okay.
Get a couple books, don't get everything. Don't go, well, I'm gonna buy all of that, I'm gonna buy all that, buy all that. Just work, start small. And this is from my experience because I've done this
Yes.
and I've had to spend
Okay.
reading all the books, but start small and then move on from there.
So apart from your book, what other books do you suggest getting then?
I think this is like, every calligrapher worth their weight in gold. This book. If you're only interested in modern calligraphy, then this is a new book by Lindsay Buckby, and I think this is really, really good. It's really hefty, but I think it's brilliant, and it's got some great projects in the back as well. So I wish this book was around. So she's really good. There's a lady called Molly Suberthorpe, who's got some great books. Who else? It's got some. I think I would go on to the class, CLAS, and looking at, look at who's teaching their scripts as well. So there's loads out there, but maybe they'll just keep it small to begin with.
Yes, okay. No, because there's just so much information out there now, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's so easy. And also you can go on things like randomly, you can go on Vinted and get some supplies and books off of Vinted a lot cheaper.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, so you can
That's a
get
good
random
idea.
supplies.
I think Amazon sell used books as well. I've
Oh, don't
seen
they?
that.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
new and used. So like World of Books are really good. Vinted's really good. Vinted actually gives you a lot of calligraphy supplies. So if you use like a lot of people get gifted kits and don't know what to do with them. So that's always really a good place to look as well.
What's your favorite project to work on then?
I really like writing on agate, and
Okay.
I like getting a brief and going, can you just create something for this? Like when I did a World Calligraphy Day for Manuscript Friends, I sort of put a piece together for that. I've just worked on a piece for them at the moment, which I'm really excited about. I really like taking nice pictures of work. My favorite thing to do is to think of a project to then teach my students. So I've just done a couple now on black paper with like a metallic ink. I'm just looking over my shoulder to see if it's there. I love that. I love writing on bottles. I do actually really like writing on like smooth, really smooth surfaces. I struggle with shells. I do write on shells, but they're really tricky.
On shells.
Yeah, so like
Oh, wow.
so they're quite interesting. There's not many projects I don't enjoy doing. I love wedding calligraphy. I love doing envelopes and seeing where people live because I'm nosy. And see what they're having at their wedding breakfast. Yeah, there's not yeah, there's loads, loads more that I can talk about, but I can't be blank, sorry.
Well, no, that's incredible. I didn't even know you could write on shells. I didn't think about that. I
Yeah, so
just.
oyster shells on the inside. I'm trying to see if I've got a piece of agate here that I bought as an example.
Oh, yes, please.
I'm just going to see if I can find something else. I work for this company, so I do a lot of calligraphy on these bottles for them. I've done some live event calligraphy, so that's been quite nice.
Oh, wow.
So here we go. So this is agate. So you get lots of different colours, and it's I don't know what it is, but I find it so satisfying to write on. It's so smooth and so forgiving, and you never have any issues with agate. And
Wow.
then they just look really pretty because you can put like a really nice gold ink on them, and then I
What kind
spray
of ink
them.
is it?
So you have for me, I use like a mica ink, so it sits on top of the agate and it dries on top because sometimes the ink kind of floods out and it looks a bit flat.
Yeah.
Always had a thing throughout my whole sort of design career of like I like ink to sit on top of paper or on top of something, not to flood into it. So I have a mica based ink that sits on top of it, and it's so effective. And I'm always really satisfied when you've got like 100 of them on the table and you think, oh,
Does it give a slight texture when it's dry then because it's more on top?
no, well, it can do, but I tend to spray it as well because I've got this huge paranoia about weddings and people touching it and scratching
Ah.
it and getting an angry bride. Like I've got a huge fear of angry brides. So,
Oh,
like I've written on apples.
Oh, and wow. Okay. Yeah.
And let's test that to make sure the calligraphy stayed on there. I put apples in the back of the car and drove around with them to see if it came off.
That's a good idea.
So that was interesting. So here we go. This is one that I've done for my patrons recently with this lovely ink.
It's gorgeous.
This is Peter. It sits on top of the paper. I think it's one of the best inks I've ever had. So I love doing that. I love working on those projects. And like anything, like when a project comes together and it just clicks and it's like, oh, it's just such a nice feeling. So,
oh,
yeah.
That's so exciting. So you do a lot of experimentation then.
Yeah, I do. I do a lot more now. Like I stopped for a while where, you know, we're selling on, you know, during COVID, everyone had to sell and be an entrepreneur and that kind of, I feel like I lost my soul and lost my way a little bit, but I've stopped that now and I've gone back to, you know, the things that I love the most about calligraphy are calligraphy and teaching it and learning. So now it's like, I've opened up this whole area again of remembering why I do it, and it's having fun and then teaching it.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So are there any exciting upcoming trends for calligraphy then?
I think personally it will be the traditional styles are coming back. I've seen it coming back a little bit more. So traditional styles are coming back, but they've all got a modern spin on them, whether it's different, you know, ways that you're creating that or the inks or the materials that you're writing on. Yeah, that's definitely coming back. I've seen a lot of like lovely gothic scripts that, you know, before you kind of feel a bit icky about them, but actually now they look really cool. Yeah, I would say that's the main one. Definitely, there's, you know, people are, you know, as people are getting confident in this, they're moving away and seeing what else they can do. And, you know, you can use, you know, letter writing and sign writing, and, you know, that's great too.
Gosh, that's so amazing and very exciting. Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for joining me today and taking me through the basics of calligraphy and telling me about all these books and online tutorials and people to look up. It's incredibly exciting.
Bombarded you with information now, so you're
so like, much information. I need to go away and look all these people up and like.
I know there's loads. There are
do
loads.
This whole workbook. This is an incredible workbook. I can't wait to go through it. I'll have to then email you and show you my work, and you can
yeah, anytime.
If you like,
you could just email me a picture of, you know, you're struggling with something, a picture of where your hand is and what you're doing. Trying to tell
right
what you need adjusting, but definitely go in. Where are you based?
I'm based in Pembrokeshire.
So I'm trying to think.
In Wales, yeah.
So you might have some people that don't actually know anybody in Wales. Funny enough. So there you go.
You know me now.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
It was an absolute pleasure.
If you've enjoyed listening, remember you can watch this podcast with video and no ads at learnmycraft.com, where you'll also find animal art practice journals, books, and tutorials to get you started. Hit subscribe and follow the podcast, and we'll see you next time.